Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, Pete Donaldson here from the Football Ramble. Perhaps you've listened before. We don't usually do this due to the fluid nature of football reporting and indeed the fluid nature of time itself. But we basically thought it was necessary, since we actually dedicate a whole corner to him, to basically say this podcast was recorded on Monday night before the tragic news that Mr. Diego Armando Maradona left his post as Argentina manager. So it seems that some hairs on heads actually did get touched after all, so yeah. Enjoy the show regardless, though.
Hi, it's Cam here, Chris Kamara. It's unbelievable, Jeff, and this is the Football Ramble.
Welcome. Come on in. Football Ramble time, ladies and gentlemen. And it's lovely to have your ears. Luke Moore is to my left.
All right.
Pete Donaldson is nearly opposite me.
I'm nibbling your ears. Mm.
You're not. And James Earl Jim Campbell is to my right.
Easy.
Good.
All right, Ice Cube.
Yeah. Gentlemen.
Doggy Snoop Snoop.
No, let's not start doing that. Here's the opening question coming at you.
Oh, spontaneous.
It's summer signing time.
Yes, yeah? It is. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the season.
You're right.
Or the pre-season, should I say. What was a memorable summer signing for you chaps from overseas?
Do you want me to go first?
Please.
I'll go for when... It's a bit of a double one for me. Bit of a Barney Rubble.
Okay.
I'll go for when... out of the blue, Javier Mascherano and
out of the sky blue,
and Carlito Tevez signed for West Ham.
Yes,
very strange.
Well, that was funny because there was a lot of reports the previous day saying Tevez had pretty much signed for Arsenal, and then out of the blue he'd signed for West Ham.
It was all very shady, and we know what happened afterwards. It all went a bit sort of wrong. And Sheffield, let's not mention it too much because Sheffield United fans will get very annoyed again.
Yes. Yeah,
but that would be mine because it came from nowhere.
With Sean Bean.
Well, we knew, and the crazy thing about it was that after a while, Javier Mascherano was being kept out of the team by Hayden Mullins. He couldn't get near the first team. Yeah. Tevez took a while, but when he got going, he kept West Ham up. You know, not so handy, but you know, he did.
He
really
was a
well.
Huge part.
Yeah,
it was a massive, massive. The sort of thing that Sky Sports News was invented for, signing. You know, so I'll go for those.
There was a great moment when Tevez, I think it was his first goal for West Ham, because you know he took a while to score. Yeah. There was a free kick against Spurs in off the bar, and they lost 4-3 at home, and he scored, and he just galloped into the crowd. Yeah. It was a wonderful moment.
He jumped into the crowd and started biting chunks out of fans.
There was no vampire behaviour.
Mascherano was funny in that instance, wasn't he? Because it just seemed like he really didn't try. You wonder whether it was just that he was sort of having trouble settling, but he was either an absolute disgrace or just a very despondent man. It's very hard to know which.
But maybe he knew, because of these sort of shady dealings, he thought, well, I know there's a better club on its way, so I can't be bothered here or something.
Well, did a bit of what's known in the trade as a Winston Bojardo.
Possibly.
Sorry, they won the World Cup. I've never heard of this club before. Exactly. How did that happen? They won the World Cup.
Pete, your summer signing.
My summer signing, Frank Dumas to right. United in...
'99.
No, it's not really.
Oh,
I was torn between Ginola to Newcastle,
because
I remember being in the northeast at the time, before the internet. Before the internet, Marcus, can you imagine such a thing?
Yeah.
They just ran the same PSG goal over and over again on Look North. Mike Neville. Mike Neville introducing the sport, and they just used to. They only had one crappy, sort of really badly VHS up clip of him scoring a goal.
If you're in the north, does that just mean look around?
Yeah. Look at look at Scotland.
So that sounds to me like they've titled that show predominantly for southern audiences. Yeah, but it only goes out in north.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm actually going to go for Rubinho. The last day of the transfer window.
Rubinho didn't know what was going on, nor did Mark Hughes.
No.
Oh, you signed Rubinho, have we? Oh, excellent. Excellent.
He did all right the first season, and he was. He had a few very, very decent matches, and it was just nice to have somebody of. It was probably the biggest signing that summer, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a bit of a shock at the time as well, because we very quickly become desensitised to City being sort of like a player in the transfer market. But then that was like wow.
That was before their money. But it seemed like that was before they got their money. Weirdly, even though it was
around the same sort of time,
32 million euros, whatever the hell it was.
Was that the summer of Andy Burton?
It was, yeah.
Every summer's the summer of Andy Burton.
But like James says, that Rubinho signing was a massive statement of intent, because no one had really got used to the fact that there was money. And you know, it's a bit like these sort of things tend to happen so often. it happened at Pompey. I was being taken over by billionaires. So often does it never sort of transpire.
Come to anything, yeah.
But then that was a real statement of intent.
Well, you're not going to get that back, they say.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And they didn't.
James or Jim?
Well, I'm going to show my Arsenal bias again and go for like a very, very exciting foreign transfer, which is, of course, Mikhail Silvestre. He was an overseas player. No, I'm obviously not going to go for him because he looks like a fish and a potato, as we've discussed before. Yeah, who knows? I'm actually going to go for Marc Overmars. Because it was genuinely exciting. Obviously, Dennis Bergkamp heralded sort of that kind of era.
I thought you were going to go for Bergkamp.
Well, yeah, I thought about Bergkamp, but I thought, yeah, it's kind of obvious. But Overmars was such an exciting signing, and it's the kind of signings I miss at Arsenal now. And obviously I don't begrudge Wenger's policies, because you know they work to a degree, and you don't want to put the club at sort of long term financial risk, but I do miss that kind
of
excitement.
Yeah,
exactly.
You got Shamak in the summer.
Shamak looks decent, yeah, but you know what I mean, though. He was sort of well-established sort of star, and he lived up to it all. He was a great, great player. Really exciting to watch, and he added so much to the team. And I think my memories are all the fonder purely because he did live up to it all.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Good one, James, good one. Mm. I'm going to go for Ruud Gullit.
Oh, yeah.
Good one.
To Chelsea. And the reason why I'm going for that is, for me, that was... Remember, I think you said on the podcast last week, Luke, that... in amongst that, there was a coherent sentence. And he said something about the MLS is now sort of taking the Premier League's crown.
Well, aging world stars. Was it actually a pertinent point, was it, James? I accept your apology. That's no problem at all. You carry on.
Hullet came on, and he still had something to offer. Because he was a striker, obviously.
Oh, he's a classy player, isn't
he? But he kind of took a step back, didn't he? Did he not play centre back?
Love it when players.
He can play anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think he played a bit at centre mid as well. And it was like bloody hell, this guy was one of the best players in the world, and he's come here, and it was so exciting. And he was one of the first ones that really got the foreigners over, and
along with Bergkamp, actually. Bergkamp was a big
Zola as well.
Yeah,
Zola was, I think Zola was a year or two after.
But you know
it took a while to bed in, didn't it? The whole culture of it.
Yeah, of course.
Ruud Gullit was certainly at one stage the best player in the world, I'd say. I'll stick my neck out and say that.
Yeah.
Very underrated in how he's sort of reflected upon Gullit, because he very much was well up there for one of the best players in the world, but you rarely hear him sort of spoken about.
No, you don't. You're right.
He had great touch for a big man. he was like a big lampshade with tassels running around. He was so lanky.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the sort of last examples of a moustached brilliant footballer as well.
He didn't have a tash when he went to.
He did though, James, you're right. But I think when he went to Chelsea, he got rid of it.
Oh, World Cup 90, he had the dreadlocks and the tard, yeah.
Yes, of course. Without a doubt, I'm taking the points.
Oh. Move on.
Nice one, Jack Warner.
By the way, Jack Warner. I know what Jack Warner's been up to.
Tell us.
You're not going to believe this.
I am.
Acting Prime Minister.
What?
Are you being serious?
I'm being serious. Acting Prime Minister, when the actual Prime Minister has been away on business, Jack Warner has been running Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh my
word.
So the reason he's not winning the World Cup, bigger fish to fry.
Just imagine like Scrooge McDuck jumping into a big pile of money.
Thanks to the listener who tweeted me that. I forget your name, but that was wonderful news. Also terrifying.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Because, I mean, FIFA in previous tournaments did seem like very much just sort of the organising body, but now they've become this terrifying sort of like Skynet style corporation that seem to be gradually taking over the world with their FIFA courts and their members running countries, actually running countries. Terrifying.
At least give it the Shaka Hislop or Brian Lara or something. I don't know.
That's how it works. But the problem is that's how it works in this country.
Notable
as well.
Men.
Right, I've got to pop across to the US. Who's around?
Gaza.
Brian, bless you.
Well, it's working like that in Liberia, hopefully.
George Ware, as we often say.
Let's. I think that was international football that we touched on there. I don't know quite the international politics. The European Under-19s Championship.
Yes.
Has been going on. And everybody's seen this and everybody's talking about it. We have to talk about Calvente for Spain scoring that unbelievable penalty against Italy.
Yeah.
I've watched that about 10 times and still can't figure out what he's done.
I couldn't do that with 100 attempts.
In case anybody hadn't seen it, Spain played Italy and I think they won 3-0.
Yeah, they were already 2-0 up at the time.
Then they got a penalty and Calvente, I think that's how you pronounce it, came up and took the penalty. And I mean, how would you describe it? He kind of ran up.
He kicked it with his standing foot.
Yeah, he kicked it with his standing foot, effectively.
And so took a swing at it at the same time. So it looked like it was going to the left, but it actually ended up slowly trickling on the right.
Well, he ran up as if he was going to hit it with his right
foot. If he did that for my team, 2 weeks' wages.
Really?
No.
What is this team?
But it was an absolutely audacious effort.
Yeah. It was a superb.
They're already 2-0 up in fairness.
It's sickening the amount of talent the Spanish have, isn't it? Yes. Even their under-19 side can do.
Well,
like
talent
that.
Slash arrogance, I guess.
But were the Italian players like complaining about
it? Yes, they went
like,
mental.
Oh, that's not fair.
They went mental.
I mean, it's not like the Italians that we complain, is it? That's what
didn't Thierry Henry notably do that? And when he's just training, like warming up for Arsenal, he'd go and swing at it. But
yeah, that's right.
I've seen Totti do the old spin around back heel. Have you seen that?
That is decent.
But that would I don't think that would be allowed, because I think the rule is you have to kick it forward, but as in, so that would be interpreted as he's kicking it behind him.
Okay,
no,
right.
Surely not.
No, I don't think you'd be allowed to do a back heel penalty.
Really?
I don't think.
I've never seen Totti do it in an actual game.
No, of course, one would ever do it.
Who have I seen?
Kergamon.
Which one?
Jan Kergamon, who missed the penalty.
Oh, yeah, for
Leicester.
Yeah, for Leicester.
Yeah, that was probably try.
Remind me of that. Penalty shootout in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was absolutely outrageous.
What about the Uruguayan? What's his name? Against Ghana?
Oh, Abreu.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. Abreu.
Gaul.
He's such good value.
Sheer
El Loco.
Gaul. But what I like about the age-capped tournaments is that you do get this kind of great showmanship.
Mm. Yeah.
And I remember it was either Robinho or Ronaldinho for Brazil, obviously, and he did one of those penalties where you dink it, you know. Well, he never dinked it, he just touched it along the floor and it barely touched the back of the net.
Yeah.
The sheer
Maradona used to do that.
Yeah,
I've seen Maradona take penalties but in his pomp where he would be so confident of sending the keeper the other way he would literally stroke it in.
Yeah,
you know. Another one who does that to a lesser extent, if we talked about before, is Yakuba.
Yeah,
he does that every time.
But it's great with these championships because there's not that many people watching. It's not a big television audience. They can really just express themselves. And this lad's made a name for himself already.
Speaking of expressing yourselves, England are doing okay.
They are. I was moving on to that.
They're still playing a flat 4-4-2 and hitting the front men really early.
Oh,
It's a little bit unsettling to
me. They're in the semi-final. They got they drew 1-1 with France. 90th minute equaliser got them through.
You know the guy Frank Newbel, who plays for West Ham?
Yeah.
A big forward man. They're basically hitting him at every opportunity.
Yeah, which is what we aspire.
And I'm disappointed in it. I'll tell you why, because their manager is Noel Blake, ex-Pompey.
Oh yeah,
ex-Pompey centre back. So
where do you learn that then?
Exactly. I've been racking my brains, James. I'm not sure. I'll tell you.
Dear, well,
in fact, he could probably do a job for us at the moment.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, we'll move on to that. Yeah. But, well, we mentioned Spain. There's a lot. There's a few rumblings in the Spanish transfer market, and some people have been moaning about the Spanish transfer etiquette of Barcelona and Real Madrid. Surprisingly, as if those two clubs always cover themselves in glory. But I think Barcelona have been a bit naughty with Fabregas.
A bit naughty,
yeah. James.
I very much want to swear.
Well, should we go make a cup of tea?
Well, obviously, Real Madrid get sort of taken to task for this sort of stuff all the time, and there seems to be this opinion that Barcelona seem to have let themselves down in the transfer window this season. It's not like them to do that. It is like them to do that. They do it all the time. They did it with Thierry Henry. They've done it with various other players in the past. They're with Overmars and Petit, not to the same extent. But this has been an absolute
They just victimise Arsenal.
Yeah, they genuinely do.
I suppose the Barcelona or London loan.
It's like they play a similar style, not as effectively. So they take the best players. Seems to be. the plan that actually works for them.
Give
as well.
It 3 years. But it could be Theo.
The annoying thing is, well, the annoying thing is, it's players you respect, like Xavi, like Iniesta, like even St. Lionel Messi.
Are they wheel them all out? Who's turning it today?
It's an absolute propaganda machine. Messi's come out. Loads of some Busquets. They've all been at it. Royal. That's the thing.
Busquets is one of the lowest qualities individuals I've ever seen.
Pepe Reina, who used to play for Barcelona, obviously doing that thing he did with the Spanish celebrations where he said that Cesc was the future of Barcelona and they forced a shirt on him. That outrageous.
That was horrible.
He looked really
disgusting.
Yeah, I could just imagine James in his pants on the sofa just being apathetic.
I remember it.
Squeezing a plastic cup.
It was a horrible day. Didn't have any money.
Fabregas looked so awkward.
Didn't have any toilet paper. Only food I had in the flat was fruit and fibre. What a conundrum. Yeah. Oh, made the day a lot worse.
At least it's healthy, though. Yeah. Bright side, James. You need that. It is true, though. They have signed a lot of Arsenal. Great Arsenal players.
Well, yeah, but it's...
I don't remember Ray Parlour making this. No.
It's the way they've gone about it, though, isn't it? It's really underhanded. And it's a typically Spanish thing. And it's obviously...
Oh!
There is no, but it's
talk sport.
It's true, though. Look at Madrid. I'm sure it's how they work between the clubs themselves as well. It's just
the English
playing
do all the
game.
Time as well.
Of course they do, but Madrid and Barcelona.
My favourite
Chelsea
part.
And Man City have covered themselves in glory of late with the transfer.
My favourite part of the entire
saga.
The
airfall ain't gone to Spurs.
My favourite part of the entire saga, and I do agree with what James is saying, it's scandalous the way they're behaving, and I don't condone it at all, but is my favourite part of it is the fact that it's clearly in contravention of FIFA rules to tap up players who are under contract.
Yeah.
FIFA report it on their website.
Yeah.
Xavi says this, Iniesta says that.
But they're getting around it by getting the players to do it, aren't they? Especially with his Catalan roots. And I suppose, in a way, because he was poached from their youth team, they probably think, well, this is reasonable. And there's all this stuff where they're saying, you know, we're not going to pay over the odds for Fabregas, we'll only pay the market value. But, you know, look at the players they've signed for the money they've spent. Like, Chigrinsky was like 25 million. So if Fabregas, at like 23 years old, is going to get you 15 goals, probably as many assists, in a season.
Ibrahimovic, who's not as good as Samuel Eto'o, was 40 million euros. Samuel Eto'o.
And so Fabregas is worth the valuation. I did see a report that he had signed like some sort of agreement the other day, but I think it turned out to be nothing. But there's so much.
Hasn't he completed like personal terms or something?
That was what I read. Can you do that?
But I don't think the personal terms would be. I think that would be more of a sort of lip service thing because he obviously is a Barcelona fan.
Yeah.
He will go there at some stage.
He knows the club.
I don't actually think Barcelona will get him this summer, but I think the personal terms would be the least stumbling block.
It's an unusual one, isn't it? It very much seems like there's a lot of sort of reporting saying that it's Laporta really wanted to bring him there as like a sort of final kind of jewel in the crown of his legacy, and it just seems like they're relentlessly pursuing him. And where would he play?
Well, it's
a good point.
But another thing that's worth pointing out actually is that I would predict to Barcelona to get a lot more like this because the guy who's taken over from Laporta, Rossell, he's like a really sort of not vicious, but a really sort of harsh sports marketing man, and he expects
Gary Cook.
I think people are expecting them to lose the UNICEF thing, get a proper sponsor, all that sort of stuff. So they might well.
That'd be a shame.
And in fairness, let's not forget that under Laporta they were carrying a UNICEF logo, but still going to like homes of vicious dictators and playing games there to raise money and stuff. So you know, it's not all cut and dried.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you, James. I think they are acting poorly,
and it is a shame because they're
very likely.
They are an amazing institution with the way they play football and the way they typically have played football in the past.
I just get the feeling in that sort of unit, do they need? Like you can get any player who'll be able to score goals in that situation
how much is going to cost a lot of money?
Well, they bid something like 28 million, didn't they, earlier in the season, but I think 50 million is completely reasonable for that sort of player.
Well, let's move across to Real Madrid, and two of their oldest serving players are moving on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Guti and Raul.
What a pair of players they are, eh?
Is Guti trying to get away from that deaf boxer that he's stalking?
Yeah. I think Guti might be on his way to Besiktas.
There is rumours, Besiktas. Yeah. And then Raul looks set to join Schalke 04.
There was talk
but again, it's
later today that he's also like had offers from the Premier League.
Yeah, I don't actually think Raul, I think he's a wonderful player, and he has been, certainly. I mean, Marcus, you might be able to help me out here, but I think around 2003 when they played United in the Champions League, and Raul was just magnificent. He was unbelievably good.
Is he still the all-time top scorer in the Champions League? I think he is.
Is he? Okay, I'm not sure about that, but I know that season Ruud van Nistelrooy was top scorer in the Champions League for United, but Raul must have got 9 or 10 goals that season.
I think
it was brilliant.
I think it was the season actually after Man United won the Champions League. So it might have been 1999 to 2000.
And they went
to Old Trafford and won.
Is it when Ronaldo scored a hat trick?
No. Then,
that's different.
I think it was when Roy Keane scored an own goal and then Raul scored two, and they might have won 3-1 or something.
They beat them 6-5 in aggregate. It was 2000.
No, that was another.
That's what I'm talking about anyway.
Well, that was more Ronaldo's day, whereas the one I'm talking about, Raul, I think, scored a couple of goals.
Okay, right.
He's getting on a bit.
When Fernando Redondo did that great turn.
I forgot about Redondo.
Yeah, super.
He's getting on a bit. That Schalke team is led by that. Is it McGarth, the German?
Felix McGarth.
He's like, you wouldn't want to face him. He's supposed to be a real sort of horrible. They call him Saddam.
Do they?
Because he's so horrible to his player.
Well, according to Harry Redknapp, fans would sing Saddam's name even if he put money into their club, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly. No, I think also, I mean, for me,
you're a big fan of Guti.
I probably overrate him actually, but I think he's one of my favourite players ever. I think
really,
there's not been, in my opinion, I've not seen a better passer of the ball than Guti. I mean,
would you call him a midfield general?
Because for me, a general is someone who's a bit of an enforcer.
I think Guti is almost like the ultimate utility man, isn't he? Sort of across the midfield.
Oh, in Hargreaves.
Playing in defence.
You
pointed this out once, Luke, and it's that Guti's played something like 15 times for Spain, which is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Playing that good.
He's got 520-odd games for Real Madrid, and he's played 15 times for Spain.
Yeah. But 520 games in your career... Yeah, that's not much, is it?
No. Well, I don't know. That's not bad. For the biggest club in the world.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. That's reasonable.
I think that Guti... I mean, Zidane said it as well. Zidane said if Guti had it in his head, if Guti had it in his head the way Zidane did, he'd be the same player, he said. Zidane rated him so highly. He said, look, training ground, technique, vision, passing range, he's got it all.
He was right in there with all those guys. Yeah.
Oh, he was, yeah. Well, I know a couple of people whose football opinion I respect who say they've been to the Bernabeu, they've seen all those Galacticos, and they're most impressed with Guti.
But the problem with Guti is he's a massively
difficult character. So he'd fall out of almost every manager, and then the manager would invariably leave, and he'd be there starting again with a new manager, who then he'd fall out with. So he'd only play the first sort of 4 months of a new manager's tenure, and he'd never get in the team again.
But he did, I suppose, raise his game. He had to, because when Beckham signed for them, everyone thought it was going to be...
Well, changed it. The league got that much better that everyone had to step it up, you know.
But I remember he was really put out, and he thought, oh, he's going to take my place, and there was talk of him going elsewhere. But he didn't. He managed to. He kept his place.
Wherever he goes, I like to see him hopefully playing for a Champions League club or
Bolton.
There's talk of him going to Blackburn or something. And that would
Allardyce is weirdly good at getting players to do that, though, isn't
it? Yeah. I mean, there's talk of Riquelme and all sorts, but I think that's obviously bollocks as well.
Right, well, let's go down a few footballing tiers to Sheffield Wednesday.
Footballing tiers could very well be shed soon.
There we are, James. Good. They've got a winding up order. And they have it's over an unpaid tax bill.
£500,000, I think.
£550,000.
Yeah,
not the spiralling debts of other clubs.
Yeah, it's not huge, is it? I mean,
it's not ideal, though, is it?
No,
it's quite hard to raise, surely, from that sort of club's perspective.
It often seems obscene because, I mean, if you remember a while ago when Hyde United got in touch, and we were like talking about them trying to raise money for them. And their bill, I mean, for them it was quite big. But if you think of the sort of perverse amount of money that's in football,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think the problem is you get into a situation where you're like, well, it's only £500,000. Clubs could put together and bail them out, but I mean they need to run their club properly. Yeah. I don't think that's necessarily fair to say that.
I guess tax bills are one sort of slice of a very big debt pie.
Yeah.
I imagine they've probably got debtors as well as tax.
I know is that HMRC are getting a little bit annoyed with not getting money all the time for football. Everyone else gets money, they never get it.
Well, fortunately, Palace are set to emerge from administration.
That's good news.
On the subject of Palace, I have an email.
Oh, yeah. Far away, Old Sport.
Ramblers, parenthesis, ho.
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 It's pre-season, and at this special time of year, I am often reminded of a comical pre-season friendly I saw featuring Ian Dowie's newly promoted Crystal Palace.
Oh.
I was living in Germany at the time and working with a Palace fan. As Premiership teams travelled the globe to unearth untapped third world commercial markets, Simon Jordan sent Palace by ferry and coach over to Austria at the last minute to play some local teams.
It's good of him.
Yeah. Being just across the border from Austria, me and my mate caught the train across to see them play. When we arrived, we were startled by what we saw. Palace were playing on a pitch in the local park of an Austrian village. There was no ground as such, no barriers, no stand or obvious seating area. So me and my mate sat down with a few cans on the touchline, still amazed we were due to watch a Premiership side playing in what was essentially a local park. My favourite moment was when Dougie Friedman went down under a hefty challenge right by where we were sitting.
Go on, Dougie.
Not wanting to miss an opportunity to get close to his idol, my mate wandered onto the pitch next to the clearly distressed Dougie. He promptly lay beside him in a position which I believe in the Kama Sutra is referred to as spooning. After which I took a photo of them both just as the angry physio ushered us away.
However,
the afternoon took a turn for the worse when later, after the game, my mate approached the players for an autograph. Not one single player signed for him, and even Ian Dowie waved him away saying no autographs, despite my mate being one of only five Palace fans at the game, in a park in Austria.
How can you not sign an autograph?
He had just spooned Dougie Friedman.
If anything, definitely give him an autograph for that.
Yeah. My mate was clearly upset and decided we should leave. Before doing so, he just nipped into the park shack to use the facilities before our 3-hour train ride home. It turned out all the Palace players were in the shack getting changed. 5 minutes later, my mate returned, grinning like mad, and shouted, "Far too loudly for my liking, I've just seen Dougie Friedman's knob." Every cloud. Incidentally, Palace won 2-1. Pre-season friendlies, you gotta love them. At ease, gentlemen. Stuart. Thank you very much, Stuart.
That's good. Good story. Well done to you, Stuart.
That's marvellous.
And to your unnamed friend.
Marvellous. Well, a ridiculous pre-season tour there. Speaking of which, Portsmouth have been on a pre-season tour of North America.
Well, sort of. Sort of a pre-season tour.
Well, yeah, they their week-long tour of the United States and Canada. Apparently, they could scarcely field a team. They relied heavily on youngsters with no experience. And they got stranded in Chicago by a lightning storm. That's not their fault. We can't blame them for that.
Well, I blame involved.
Peter Story.
They only had about 4 hours to sleep, the players, apparently, before Saturday's game with DC United. And they had no time to train for 3 days.
Yeah, the worst part about all this is that Pompey actually ended up playing DC United.
Yes.
Lost the kit.
Yes.
So had to play in DC United's away kit.
Yep.
And got humped 4-0.
Yeah.
Well, no, wearing the other team's kit.
There was three sendings off in that game. Hayden Mullins was one of them.
Well, it's embarrassing, isn't it? You know, but you need these pre-season tours to get yourself ready for the season.
Yeah.
You know, like the Man City, while they've been over in their US camp, they've had that big welcome to the US with Tevez. They've redone that picture.
Yeah.
For the their camp.
Yeah, God, I wonder what the Americans think of that.
Carnu.
Oh my God.
Carnu.
Yeah.
I think that Carnu might not have made the trip. I think Carnu might be at home in Nigeria.
Is that
as
right?
Always.
DVT. Yeah.
Apparently, two players were injured in the Edmonton game.
Oh, the keeper, yeah.
Quite badly one, though.
John Stewart, yeah. He's quite highly rated.
It's just been an absolute disaster of a tour.
Why do I get the feeling you've put this in the running order for a very specific reason?
just to inform. But Steve Cottrell is there.
I like Steve Cottrell.
I do as well. I've met the man. Lovely fella. Very enthusiastic. Absolutely loves football. Really, really does. To the point of, I'm sure he'll be sitting in pubs around Portsmouth asking people's opinions and getting stuck into the chat. He really does love it. And I think for a club that has been going through such a hard time and things clearly have got even worse, you'll need someone, a big personality with a lot of enthusiasm and a likeable chap to get them going, and hopefully he's the man.
Well, he's from, the thing with Steve Cottrell is he's not from the South Coast, but he spent a lot of time on the South Coast. He was at Bournemouth for a while, and I was saying to you earlier, Marcus, actually, that when Portsmouth went through that stage, you guys probably remember, not so long ago, just going through managers all the time, Steve Cottrell was always piping up saying he wanted the job, and that's before all this happened, so you know that he's there for the right reason.
And he has a reasonable CV as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he didn't last long at Stoke. He's well rated as a number two for a while. I'm pleased. I think, to be honest, I think it's got to the stage where Pompey are lucky to have him. He's got experience, you know, he's managed clubs before at a decent level, and like you say, Mark, he does come across as very enthusiastic, and I think, you know, if anyone can stabilise that ship, hopefully it'll be him. But it's not started well, obviously. It's just the losing to the team in the away kit which annoys me.
That's a real indignity, isn't
it? It's a shame. But yeah. I mean, that's the way it goes, you know.
That's the way it goes. Burnley have been on a pre-season tour, the Far East.
Yeah, what's this about? Because I didn't read much about this.
Well,
but this is quite
a nice story. They went on a pre-season tour of the Far East. This was funded by a businessman called John Banaskowitz, and he was so fed up that the Premier League's top four teams, got all the support in Southeast Asia that he decided to sponsor his beloved Burnley a trip to Singapore to boost their appeal. And he's obviously a very wealthy businessman to do such a thing. The watch proudly is his side rounded off a successful tour with a 1-0 win over a Singapore select side.
Nice.
But the reason why apparently there was a lot of Man United shirts in the crowd. Mm. So, you know,
wouldn't have gone down well.
Maybe they're going to be Burnley next season, who knows. But apparently this all came about because in his offices they've got clocks on the office walls, sort of Shanghai, Singapore, Dubai, all the time zones, and he had one of Burnley as well. A big Burnley fan. And he provided he gave a photo of this to the Burnley FC site, I think, and they invited him to come and watch the 2-1 defeat by Chelsea at the end of January just gone. And at the time they were discussing their shirt sponsorship with their current one, and he said it's a Singapore based company, and he said, well, they're absolutely mad about soccer out there, why don't come and let's organise a tour. So bang, they did.
Well, and he paid for stuff. It
helps to have rich mates.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
but it's a nice story.
If any fan of the Ramble was a rich businessman and listening, yeah, and would like to fund
a pre-season Ramble tour,
I'll Dougie Freeman, yeah.
That's what it's known as now, from now on.
Absolutely. We're staying in the US. Thierry Henry scored on his debut against Spurs.
Yeah. Loves it, doesn't he? Absolutely loves it.
You happy with that, James?
I'm delighted. Yeah. Let's be honest.
I thought you might be. Oh, he's forgotten about. Draw your eyes about Barcelona.
Yeah. He was involved in a wonderful piece of television, Thierry Henry. Oh, yeah.
That was great stuff.
I'm sure we've all seen
it. The best question, when he got interviewed, it was on a subsubsidiary of Fox Network, wasn't
it? Yeah,
it was
like a sort of This Morning style programme.
They hadn't done their research. Yeah. The girl said, so you've just come from the World Cup where you won. You're a World Cup. And he was like, no.
Just imagine the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think Henry did well, didn't he, really, in the face of such unprofessionalism. They clearly didn't know who he was, and she was talking to him like, so you are from France.
Yes.
You are doing so well to understand our language.
Really,
he did come across really sort of cool as a kid.
He's unflappable, isn't he?
But yeah, he's
didn't
very
he, hasn't he made
calm,
some funny
he?
Comments about racism in Europe and
well,
stuff?
Well, I think that was interesting.
The presenters did.
Well, they said to him, he'd previously said one of the things he was looking forward to getting away from in Europe was the racism, but they did it in a way so it sounded like it was everywhere.
That was that was the reason
everywhere.
He was moving.
Refuted, but they did. They still managed to make it look like that.
I mean, sadly, they are right. There is still a lot in Europe, especially around football. But as you say, James, the way they did it did sound like you can't move for it. You know?
They've never had any racism in.
People like Thierry don't really have problems, do they?
Exactly.
Didn't he call him like the Thierry Henry as well, or something?
Yeah, he didn't do very well with the name. Mind you, I mispronounce names all the time. Bless your brother.
The bloke tried to ad lib, and he starts going. He went off the script, the male presenter, and he starts going. And what about those horns? The horns they have. Horns.
It's very Richard Madeley, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was like, "What the boobies are they?" He's like, "Yeah, the horn. Could you play with the horns? Was it off putting?" And he was a bit like, "Okay." Honor was like, "Yes, it's off putting."
Oh dear. Now, gentlemen, we haven't talked about this man for a little while. England and Sweden's Kenny Pavey.
Yay!
And why am I talking about him, I hear you?
Friend
cry.
Of the show.
Why are you talking about him?
Thank you. It's Champions League preliminary round.
Preliminary.
I think I got there.
Yeah.
We're going to move on anyway. It could be here for hours. And AIK, Ike.
Icor.
Yeah. Why are they called Icor?
It's just a nickname, local nickname, yeah.
They've gone through to the third qualifying round of the Champions League. And they're going to play Rosenborg, who beat Lingfield.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a bit of a tough one, because Rosenborg, or whatever the local pronunciation is, Luke.
He made that up. He doesn't actually know.
I'm just joining in.
Rosenborgenstein!
I'm staying out of this.
They're going to be playing them, and Rosenborg have been in the Champions League before. Little bit of pedigree there.
Yeah.
But they've been roundly beaten in the Champions League before as well.
But they've still got there, though, which is always an achievement for the smaller side. So the first leg will be happening possibly by the time this is out, and then the second leg will be happening at the beginning of August. If Pavey and Co. can beat Rosenborg, then they will go into the next round, and if they win that, then they will be in the Champions League
proper.
However, if they can just beat Rosenborg, then no matter what happens, they'll have European football because they'll be into the Europa League.
And just epic season.
So, let my dream, my pavy dream.
Everybody. I want everybody to think good thoughts,
like Uri Geller style.
Yeah, Vicor. Put them out there, and we want them in European football, preferably Champions League. Yeah. You know, but let's just Rosenborg.
Hopefully, they'll get to Wembley. And we'll
get more games.
Meet Kenneth.
Pavey's.
That's what we're holding out for, Kenny.
Pavey's best mate is Jimmy Bullard, so hopefully he can get one over on him by getting European football when Bullard's not got it.
That's right. In the Europa League, Mallorca have been expelled from the competition with Villarreal taking their place.
Why?
They're just wedgies, peanuts.
exactly. But Bangor Chaos. City from Wales are still alive after people saying the greatest night in the club's history.
Yeah, that's incredible. Isn't
went
it?
Through. So good luck there. Right then, chaps. Let's just take it off a different tangent.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Paul the Octopus update.
Sorry, do you want to use his full name? English-born Paul the Octopus.
I'm sick of hearing about this frickin' octopus.
Well, we started, so
but
we will go on.
Free.
Last week, you wanted to put him on Howard Webb's head.
Yeah, and that will be the end of it. I had a solution for him.
Well, he's been named an honorary citizen of a Spanish town.
What? Landlocked. This is agony. What use is the key to the sea?
Yeah. Well, it could be on the coast.
It could be.
I haven't done proper research, to be honest. I thought that was enough.
Wait a minute. It's not the only water in the world exists in the sea. You can put them in a tank.
Well, apparently, you know, octopi, whatever they're called, can get out of pretty much anything. They're really, really intelligent and they can make themselves really small and manipulate a lot.
I don't think they are
apparently. They're very intelligent.
What's the best thing that an octopus has ever invented?
Can you do anything that an octopus can do?
He's a better predictor of football games than me. I'll give him that.
Exactly. And you present a podcast about football.
In my defence, I am English born also.
Yeah, yeah,
that's reasonable and something to be proud of, right? But apparently they quite regularly, like, they get out of tanks and stuff thinking, oh, I'll go and try and find some other water, and they just die.
Is that true?
Yeah,
that's
I've heard
amazing.
That before. In sort of zoos and stuff, they have to be really well
careful.
Looked after.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
get out.
Yeah, think on Fabregas. Yeah.
Well,
sort of works.
I don't know what that means.
He's trying to get out of one tank. He may not
die.
Have an eye
on the way to Barcelona.
Yeah. Who
could
knows?
Happen. Could happen.
Well, do you remember when lots of people have been trying to get Paul the Octopus. Some people actually
some
trying
people
to
are
grill
trying
him.
To get him.
Yeah.
No, they were no physically. They were trying to. They were people were talking about grilling him.
Yeah.
Literally, they
tapas.
Yeah.
No, the Spanish were actually defending him because they're big fans of Paul there.
Oh yeah, I bet they are. And they fans us in a big pot.
And leave the Ghanaian man out of this.
Never.
Imagine that he's cooking up.
Cook him in the Ghanaian pot man's pot.
It would be right.
it would be poetic justice.
Football's
I'm not sure why.
Football is eating itself.
Yeah.
Well, this is all conspired to bring us such a ridiculous little story, which a Chinese film company has now, they're going to come up with a comic suspense film called Kill Paul Octopus.
It's gone too far.
Well, they're looking for an actor to play Paul. I assume that's another octopus.
Yeah.
But Zhao Jiang, who he's the main man behind the film. He sent invitations to the aquarium in Germany, inviting Paul to attend the film premiere in China. And the octopus appearing in this film is an actor who looks similar to Paul.
An acting octopus?
Don't mean to sound racist, as we've, you know, discussed a lot of things, but yeah. surely they all look the same, don't they?
Yeah. I thought you might be playing Billy the Squid.
Yeah. Do you know? Who knows?
No, let's just gloss over that a little bit.
There we are. The only place we can go now...
Yeah.
...is Diego Corner.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, it won't go away. And Luke's gone there...
We've rented it out.
To bring you some quite magnificent scenes from South America, Luke.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right, yeah.
Hello.
How's it going?
We can hear you.
Not too bad. Thanks for asking. Basically, Diego is still being Diego Maradona.
Yeah, well, that was always going to be the case.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he was always. I think he was always like this, but I'm thinking I'm much more aware of it now because I know that I've got to deliver in Diego Corner, so I'm always... it doesn't ever pass me by anymore.
Now you've got a passport to Diego Corner.
Yeah. Well, I'm the custodian.
Are you?
Yeah, really. And okay. No one else is here. Yeah, the best thing is that, I mean, I've got a few things that he's been up to.
Right.
And you might have seen one or two of them, but I'll lead with the best one, which is basically, remember last week we talked about him going to see Hugo Chavez?
That's right.
Who's obviously the Venezuelan president.
Well, they're just going to play a bit of football.
Oh, they're
softball.
They're knocking about, playing a bit of football, softball.
It must be
cigars.
Sort of, I'd imagine they're just chilling. They're probably not doing anything harmless.
Things have taken a much more serious twist. I had rather
nice fight. Nice fight.
Do tell.
Well,
do
basically,
tell.
You know, well, I'm not sure if anyone knows, and I'm no expert.
Did you just shout knife fight?
Yeah. they've got on. They've
not got that serious yet.
I reckon they would.
Stay tuned.
I bet they do a bit of Russian roulette.
But anyway, so I'm no expert in international relations.
No, you may
have seen in the news recently that Venezuela and Colombia have had quite strained relations, and it's basically around
who would have thought?
Colombia are accusing Venezuela of housing sort of Colombian rebels and looking after them and all this sort of stuff. I don't know if it's true or not. I'll get back to you. I'll ask Diego next time I see him. But Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez addressed the nation.
Well, don't Colombia sort of have a few links to the US?
Well, exactly.
There's some little thing there. And
to cut a long story short, Chavez isn't happy with Colombia, and he took an opportunity to give an interview addressing the nation about, you know, what his plans were, what he was going to do, how he feels about Colombia, what the sort of border relations are going to be like. Diego was there.
Diego's by his side.
Standing next to him. Yeah.
Oh.
And, and Diego chipped in. Saying, I will support Hugo. He's not even Venezuelan.
Oh my God.
But he chipped in saying, I will support Hugo Chavez until his ideals to the end. It's an honour to be at his side because he fights for his ideals, for the people, for his country. I am with him until death.
It's like we were saying earlier, this World Cup is taking over the world in a very terrifyingly real way.
I just like the fact that I can imagine Diego being exactly at ease with international foreign policy as he is.
Yeah.
With football, to be fair.
It'll be alright.
It'll be fine.
Why are you not signing your new contract to be Argentina coach for another 4 years, Derek? Well, I've been in Venezuela, for instance. But let me put this into perspective.
Starting a bit of a revolution, actually.
Let me put this into perspective. That is like David Cameron saying he's closing the Channel Tunnel and bringing Gaza along.
Yeah.
And saying, because Gaza can say, yeah, well, you know, I agree.
I'm with it till death.
You really don't. You don't want
brought a chicken.
Yeah. You don't want Gaza turning up in inappropriate situations, do you?
No, it
must be said, actually, with that whole thing where Gaza was involved. Surely his plan, right, was to use the fishing rod to get the chicken and the beer into the guy.
Who knows?
But anyway, so
there's more.
Well, Chavez responded to Maradona's kind words by saying, "Viva socialism, viva the homeland, viva sports, and viva Maradona."
Yeah,
viva Las Vegas.
ZZ Top sung the chorus.
I think that's what Chavez said, but the details got a bit sketchy.
All right.
But anyway, a couple of other bits and pieces. He's happy to carry on as Argentina coach.
Oh, right, he is.
But he's not having anyone getting involved.
No.
Unless it's Oscar Ruggeri, who's like his best mate, and he's been denied him in the past. But he said, "If they touch the kit man, if they touch the massage therapist, I'm out. I want to continue with the coaching staff and nobody touches any of them."
Why be so aggressive all the time?
Can the massage people touch you?
Just ask.
Otherwise we're in trouble. But he went on to say something about, like, if they even touch a hair on one of their heads, the deal's off.
Oh.
Is that how they sack people in the Argentinian setup and they just physically eject them from their job?
It must be.
But you're probably thinking, when he was in Venezuela, he wouldn't have any other time to be doing anything else.
No, he's got to go back to the AFA and have a word and say, are you going to be manager?
Well, if anything, one left-wing dictator's probably enough, isn't it?
God.
He found time for another one. Tell Fidel that I love him, he says.
Mr. Castro of Cuba.
As he admits, being a long-time admirer of Fidel Castro.
Yeah, of course he is.
And obviously, a few of you may remember that Maradona went there to get over his rather ugly drug addiction.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
But yeah, that's it from the Diego Corner for now.
We were there for ages.
Yeah, we were. I'll just lock up and I'll be back in a minute.
Dear idea. It's turning into Diego Nation. My goodness.
Well, I've got an email,
Pete,
Marcus.
Finish us off with an email.
I will polish you off.
Give us a happy ending.
Well. This is from a young man by the name of Craig Ball from Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Where are you?
No. Ramble Fosshole. After listening to Drew Farmer's email last week about the World Cup stadium in South Korea, I felt inclined to write an email about the craziness. Is that a word?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, it'll do.
That is the K-League. I, too, am a foreign language teacher just out of Seoul and decided to go watch the local local team FC Seoul, who play in their World Cup stadium. The K-League has massive potential.
Is it called FC Seoul?
Yeah.
It sounds like a Duran Duran album.
Maybe. The K-League has massive potential. Nearly everything is in place. Stadium, the big sponsors, transport, etc. All apart from the players. The K-League has a three foreigner rule. FC Seoul has players from Portugal, Brazil and Montenegro, and automatically they are the best players on the team. The standard is probably League One-esque, but they try to play the ball on the floor.
That's League One in England rather than France, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
As said previously, attendances are indeed low. Most kids haven't heard of the K-League teams and prefer the Premier League. They love Bolton now for some reason, which is just wrong, he says.
That's a travesty, isn't it?
Because of, I forgot his name, sorry.
Excellent attempt to explain it.
Oh, Coyle.
It's Craig Ball. You stay on the ball, sir. Yeah. Yeah, however, it has been improving. FC Seoul recently got 60,000 for a game against their local rivals, Suwon Blue Wings. Each team here has a hardcore group of fans known as the Ultras, who travel to all the home and away games. That's just support, isn't it? Really? I know it's a big country, but they take all sorts of rubbish to the games. Big flags, vuvuzelas and drum kits. Each set of
hits.
Symbols, really sharp symbols.
One man band.
And a stool.
Yeah. Each set of ultras has one man at the front who decides which songs to sing and for how long by simply gesturing with his hand how many times. This annoyed me in my drunken state during a game, so I went across to him and held up a different number. The other 1,500-ish fans didn't have a clue what to do, so just stopped singing. You can start a chant, but can you stop one? Yeah. That's how bad, is it? Yeah. Keep the good work, lads, and please give a shout out to the lads and lasses at Lokomotiv Ilzan, the team he plays for over there.
We just have.
Yeah. Good man. Good.
Thanks for that. Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Lovely stuff. I like the, you know, the whole the guy leading the chants, the cheerleader, if you will.
Remember FC Barlow had one of them against Fulham in the Europa League.
And he was superb.
Yeah, he was passionate.
A friend of mine once went to watch Inter play, and he said there was one there. This was a few years ago. I don't know if it's the same now. But he just, like, he had a megaphone, and he described it as a leader of war. You know, he was just like, he was like, blah, 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 blah. You know, absolutely crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy.
It's great stuff.
Right, ladies and gentlemen. Profile time.
Very dynamic.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, it's Socrates, Brasileiro, Sampaio, de Souza, Vieira, de Oliveira.
Should we just call him Socrates?
Let's call him Socrates.
Everyone else does.
It's the Doctor.
The Doctor, great
stuff. My goodness, we've talked about this man a number of times on the show.
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to focus in on him in the profile.
What a man.
What a mighty good man. Can I call him an elegant midfield general?
You can do what you want.
Yeah, you can. For me, he was an attacking midfielder, very rangy.
Swarthy.
Swarthy's actually a great way of describing him.
There's sort of few times that I've actually seen full games with him involved in.
Yeah.
He always used to pass the ball and then run forward.
Yeah.
And you don't see that all
like
the time.
A snail, though. And he still managed to sort of get around people and score incredible goals.
Don't have a go at him.
No.
One thing I would say is that, and you'll probably come on to this in a minute, he was impossibly prolific for a midfielder. Yeah. Scored loads of goals.
Yeah.
I know he played a bit further forward on occasion, but he scored a lot of goals.
He did score a lot of goals, yeah. But, I mean, this man, he's just not your average footballer.
And that's why he's in here.
In fact, an average man. Yeah. No. This guy is an incredibly...
He was like 10 feet tall, wasn't he?
Well,
he's
huge. Well, he was
6'4". Can I say
but
now...
to you and I, 10 feet tall. Yeah.
This is not the point, but these days he looks a bit like Matthew Kelly.
He does!
Yeah.
He seems like the result of
lots of kind of...
Smoking?
Well, no, acid trips of various people that have dreamed this man into existence.
Yeah. You bet.
Good.
Had to be said. Incredible man. And he straight from the off, I mean, apparently his childhood heroes were Fidel Castro and John Lennon.
Serious kid.
Yeah, exactly. He began his career with Botafogo, and he had a decent scoring record there for a midfielder. And sort of league appearances, 57 league appearances and 24 goals.
Wow.
But we need to stress that he did play further forward on occasion. He did play as behind the striker as well sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm just pointing that out.
That's right.
He's better than Gerrard. Gerrard. Let's put that.
Well, no, could he cut it on a wet Tuesday, etc.
etc. Let's bin that off forever.
I already had.
A few years later, he went to Corinthians, and this is where
lion's share.
This is where the man really showed his true colours. Mm. You talk about his goal scoring record again. League appearances: 297 league appearances, 172 goals.
Yeah,
Socrates of Corinthians.
A striker would be well happy with that.
Oh, anyway. Over the moon.
Now this is where we really begin to sort of see the man's full range of skills in every capacity of life, really. He co-founded, now this is when Brazil was under a militant dictatorship. Mm. He co-founded a democracy movement at Corinthians. this was showing his distaste for the country's military dictatorship.
Joey Barton-esque.
And this is
in many ways he was a precursor to Joey.
But this is this is serious stuff. I mean, people in Brazil and a lot of South American countries, but they just go, they disappear. You know, this was a seriously bold thing to do.
He used to wear like t-shirts and stuff, didn't he?
That's right.
Get people to vote and stuff like that. Yeah.
Him and his teammates wore shirts bearing the word democracy on them. Just incredible scenes.
Big
really
licks.
Was.
It's big
it
licks.
Really was. And he said that winning the Sao Paulo state title in 1982 wearing those shirts was the most perfect moment he ever lived.
So far. That was before he went to Garforth Town, presumably.
Well, don't jump the gun.
Sorry.
He said that everybody at the club had the same right to vote. The person who looked after the kit and the president, all their votes had the same way. And this, he transformed, well, he was one of the guys who helped Sao Paulo, the club, become the only one in the world at the time to run on a democratic basis as a symbol of rejection to the military regime.
That's interesting.
That's incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. You know. So, let's go back to the football. He wasn't a teenage star growing up, really. He was a big player, but it never. We know so many Brazilians who were great at young ages.
He didn't make his international debut until about 25.
Well, that's right, and the reason for that is he delayed his
he was lost for years.
International career, until the age of 25, so he could complete his studies as a doctor.
Something to fall back on,
again.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Similar to Joey Barton.
Stop saying Joey
Sorry,
Barton.
Am I
now.
Cheapening it?
As always. That is just incredible. This is what I'm saying. Very, very different to most people, let alone footballers.
He's a doctor now. Sports medicine or sports science.
When did he sleep?
I just don't
training
know.
To be a doctor must be so intense. I know it's Brazil in the 70s or whenever, but even so, I'm sure you can't just become a doctor quite easily.
And you say it's like the air levels of like the past. 5 minutes in the hospital, you're a doctor.
That's it.
Doogie Howser.
As we said, you know, what a great player, wonderful skills, incredible vision. Someone once said, whenever he had the ball, he seemed to have so many options.
Yeah.
And you know that when a player has that, a bit like Riquelme in a way, but, you know, it was an obvious one to cite.
Well, the hallmark of a quality football player is, in my opinion, one of the easiest ways to spot a class player is, no matter how high the standard, how much the congestion in the middle of the park, they've always got time on the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and he's always got space. He finds his own space.
Yeah. That's right.
And it happens at all levels. You play at a reasonably poor level like we do, you still get players knocking around who still always find space.
It's an awareness of the last split second you have with which to release the ball, which is why.
Well, at our level, they might be offside.
Yeah,
but he was a bit of a bugger for a back heel.
Oh, that was his signature move.
He
did that quite a lot.
That's right. And of course, these skills and the fact that he was a medical student, he got the nickname the Doctor.
You'd be happy with that.
Yeah. Now,
the fact that he was a doctor.
Well, that's it.
The Doctor.
possibly his. Crowning moment for certainly for people outside of Brazil, knowing the great man, he captained Brazil to the 1982 World Cup.
Yeah,
and this team featured Falcao, Zico, Cerezo, and just one of the great sides in World Cup history, and definitely one of the best sides never to have won it.
Well, yeah, they're largely sort of credited as being the greatest side never to win it, aren't they?
Well, yeah.
Well, that played with Dutch 74 and then the Mighty Maggies of Hungary.
Some of the goals are scored in that competition.
England
and then he scored as well. Mm. I mean, the goal against Soviet Union.
But one thing that's worth mentioning is that...
it's two players and then hit top left, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
We've mentioned this before, but they're actually more highly regarded than the 94 winning team.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how much they rate them, you know.
That's right.
That goal he finished off against Italy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Z.
Yeah, different class, that is.
Yeah.
Absolutely different class. And this was, of course, under the great Brazilian coach, Tele Santana.
Mm.
Who, just briefly touching on him, his philosophy was there was much more to football than just the result. And he said, if the final score is the only point of interest, then we might as well all give up and get into numerology. because football is not all about winning.
I think probably he'd go for being a doctor, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, right. Yeah, yeah.
Some of the England players agreeing with that.
Yeah, well, they don't have the choice. and the Brazilian side, the style and the... just the sheer joy in which they played football and just how beautiful it was. It was, you know, Joga Bonita. You know what I mean? It really was. And they are remembered much more than so many other sides, and even World Cup winners.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, can you imagine if they won the thing? You know,
yeah. Again, I suppose it's comparable to the way we look at the 1990 England side. You know, they held up in real esteem because they actually sort of put in a decent performance by our standards. So, I mean, for bearing in mind what a sort of like rich history Brazil has as a nation, yeah, that's such an achievement for
Australia. Well, they won it five times
for them to stand out like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they will, you know, someone made a good point, you know, that what if they'd won the trophy, you know, in 1982? Could they have been a blueprint for future sides? Yeah. You know, and it's one of those big ifs and buts. It's such a shame. But Socrates himself, you know, clearly he got a lot of his football perspective and football philosophies from Tele Santana. Big influence on the man. Socrates himself said when talking in London quite recently, he said, "To win is not the most important thing. Football is an art and should be showing creativity. If Vincent van Gogh and Edgar Degas had known when they were doing their work the level of recognition they were going to have, they would not have done the same thing. You have to enjoy doing the art and not think, will I win?" Mm. This is incredible.
Yeah. Part of me thinks it's a bit too idealistic for me, but I mean, on the other hand, I sort of think, well, football started as like a leisure pursuit. It started as a way to pass the time and enjoy yourself. And I think there is a certain element of that, that's everyone's lost sight of that because of the money involved and because of the pressure. And it's an interesting way of looking at it. And I think, again, it is a bit idealistic, but it's a welcome way of thinking about football, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to have idealists.
Absolutely.
Well, he said, totally, Jamie. He said that with regards to Brazil's failure at the 2010 World Cup, he said, "Brazilians weren't disappointed because they didn't expect to win. Dunga's approach did not reflect what Brazilians are really like, and this was not enough creativity." But going back to his playing career, Socrates, he said he was not an ordinary athlete. I think it's safe to say. I don't think he looked at himself as an athlete as well. He smoked a pack or two of cigarettes a day.
It's a game then.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. He did appear to kind of have a fag on, you know, when he's strolling
didn't
around
the
park.
Didn't he famously have a fag at half time?
Possibly.
A few players do that, don't they?
I know he was advised that if he wanted to carry on playing football at a certain age, he'd have to give up smoking, so he gave up football.
But it's bad even for a doctor.
It's no excuse, it really isn't. And maybe this is one of the reasons why he never really settled in Italy, because he went to play for Fiorentina. Mm.
Imagine him in that kit.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Majestic.
You can vision. Watch it if you want.
Well,
it actually happened.
Yeah, exactly. And he said the lifestyle never suited him. He said, "I was a year in Florence with Fiorentina, and sometimes I didn't want to train, but to hang out with friends, party, or have a smoke. There's more to life than football." but Europe can be very regimented.
Past the gaffer. Yeah. Did that work? Yeah, well, sometimes you don't want to come to work. Sometimes you want to sit in the park with your mates and have a smoke.
Yeah,
what?
Where are you? Where are you? Why haven't you turned up to work? Oh, I'm hammered.
Yeah, there's more to life than this. Yes, I do still want the paycheck.
Oh, dear. But with that attitude, but he's achieved so much as well. It's such a funny one. But he said, you know, he mentioned that in Brazil, the way we live is not like Europe, where you have your schedule for the whole year. We don't know what we are doing for the next 15 minutes. Yeah. If you are born a Brazilian, when you play abroad, it doesn't matter how long you stay away, this stays inside you. Now, this was a guy from a very well-to-do middle-class background.
Yeah, he had
a
good upbringing,
and he has these ideals. You know, when you see these lads from the slums and they come over, and as we've discussed many times, and they go a bit off the rails, it's hardly surprising, really. Mm. In 1986, Socrates was playing again for Brazil in the World Cup in Mexico, and France and Platini beat them on penalties in the quarterfinal after a great game. And unfortunately, the big man Socrates missed one of those penalties.
Mm.
And his goal scoring record for Brazil is pretty good. I think it's 22 goals in 60 games.
It's all right, isn't it?
That's more than a third. That's more a goal every third game for Brazil, which is great stuff. After the 86 World Cup, he played for Flamengo and Santos, but he didn't really play that much again after the World Cup.
Can't be bothered.
Well, it really was. I think it was. In the remaining 3 years of his career.
You can just imagine the conversation with the manager and the Socrates. Socrates, are you up for the next game? Well, when is it? Yeah, I don't know. Tell me when it is.
Get a diary. No.
Yeah. I'm away that weekend.
Can I say yes now? Yeah. Because...
Heavy pencil.
I've got nothing on at the moment.
All right, I'll pencil it in.
Yeah. Socrates, we're about to kick off. Where have you been? Just get some fags.
Just have 10 minutes?
Yeah.
So, in his retirement, he added to his list of honours decorate in philosophy. He does continue to practice medicine in the town of Ribeirão Preto. And he is also a commentator on football and cultural issues, and he's currently writing a novel apparently about Brazil in 2014.
Yeah, it's like
the World Cup.
It's like a fictional novel based around the next World Cup, isn't it?
Yeah,
Brazil.
About love and life and the carnival.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I'll read it.
I will learn Portuguese for it, which is not true.
He said that the best thing that football gave me was the chance to get to know human beings, and I got to meet a lot of people who suffered and a lot of those on the other side of society. If I'd have stayed a doctor, I'd have just stayed in one area of society and only got to know one side of life. Nowadays people sell the idea to children that football can make you rich and famous, but that's not all. He's got the right ideals.
Yeah.
Also, it's worth mentioning that his brother Rai also played for Brazil, and he was in the World Cup winning squad in 1994.
Yeah. He was captain at the start, and Dunga took over.
That's
from him.
Right.
He actually scored
in the first game against Russia.
He did score.
He scored a penalty.
I think it was a header.
It's not a penalty.
Did he?
Oh, so it was a penalty.
He scored against.
Yeah,
Russia
you're right. It was a. Yeah,
yeah
I think. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, took over as captain, didn't he?
Romário scored the header. Yeah. It wasn't a header. It was from a corner. Yeah. What was nice as well that his brother Rai did link up with Tele Santana in the early 90s with Sao Paulo, and the two of them are considered to have played a leading role in Sao Paulo being the Brazilian team with the most international awards because they won a few of the World Club Championships.
Yeah. Rai was
a bit of the family. Bit of the.
He's about 9 years younger than Socrates, right?
Yeah,
and he's got a World Cup winner's medal, and Socrates hasn't. So
yeah, but obviously Socrates is held.
Oh, absolutely.
But Rai's a big player.
Rai was a great player,
very good player. Also played for Paris Saint-Germain in Europe. Let's fast forward a few years to 2004. This is more than a decade after retiring, and bearing in mind the man didn't exactly work up too much of a sweat when playing. He made an outrageous comeback, Socrates, playing for Garforth Town in the Northern Counties East League in England.
Standard.
Well, we say a comeback. I mean, it was a brief 12 minutes.
let him start.
He got bored.
He said that he'd smoked too many cigarettes and then it was cold. And
but yeah, that's because of the guy, I forget his name.
Was he 50 or something?
Yeah, he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Simon, someone who set up a lot of futsal things, and he's got a lot of contacts over in Brazil. Because he managed to get a number of other Brazilian players to play.
Yeah,
for
Romário, I believe, as well.
Someone like that, yeah. I'm a bit sketching the details, but it was definitely a more of a constant thing rather than just a one-off.
I heard it was Romário and he scored a million goals.
He's top scorer in the league there.
Yeah.
Currently he gives lots of seminars about leadership, human relations.
He did one in London recently.
Yeah, that's
with Alex Bayos, who wrote Football, The Brazilian Way of Life, which is definitely my book of the week. I recommend
it. Right, okay. Not Socrates' fictional...
Well, that's not out yet. It's not finished yet, is it?
Yeah. Wow, it will be.
I've got to get eyes on it first.
Okay.
I think he's spreading himself too thin.
You said this earlier, Pete. He's a consultant for social projects, cultural projects. He writes for newspapers, magazines about sport and other things.
An ambassador for Benson and Hedges.
He's still playing music. He's got a theatre project. Spreading himself too thin, you think, Pete?
But what a man.
I've only got one theatre project on the go.
Exactly.
Yeah, indeed.
Peter, we hardly knew he.
Well, anyway, I shall finish. Perhaps the inductee who's been quoted the most in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Possibly, let's get back to you on that.
So I shall finish with a quote. He said, "When I named one of my sons Fidel, my mother said, 'That's a bit of a strong name to give a child.' 'Mother,' I said,
look at what you did to me.
Oh. Come in, Socrates. You're welcome.
Got a doctor in there now. There's probably injured players in there that have been needing that for literally years.
You can teach Brian Clough a thing or two.
It's like a look at Paul McGrath's knee while you're in there.
Marvellous people, that is the end of the Football Ramble. I hope you've had a lovely time. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com, and of course the website is thefootballramble.com. James.
Yes, some of you will be aware that in a couple of weeks I'm off to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival to perform some lols,
hopefully.
If you are in Scotland or you're going up there, if you are heading up to the festival or you are Scottish and would like to come along, I've got a couple of shows on. One is called Beer Goggles, where myself and another comic called Ben Vanderveld will be discussing, you know, whether the glass is half empty or half full. You can probably work out which side I'm going to be canvassing for. That's at a club called Cabaret Voltaire, which is, if you want to look up, the postcode is EH11QR. That's from the 7th to the 28th, and that is at 1:30 to 2:30. The second one is called Fancy a Threesome, which is at the Le Monde Hotel on George Street. That's from the 4th to the 30th of August. You can actually get tickets in advance for this one, which are just a fiver. That's if you want to get tickets, the number is 0131 226 0000, or fringe@lemondbooking@gmail.com. fringe@lemondbookings@gmail.com, so you can get tickets there. So come along and I'll see you there.
That means Jim's not going to be here for a while in August because he's doing that instead. I'd like to see you do some stand up with maybe a Barcelona fan. We used to have a massive slanging match.
Yeah, and he can force an Arsenal shirt on him. So he shuts
revenge,
up.
You can deliver punchlines in Spanish, can't you?
Yeah.
Well, I could deliver punches.
Good, you'll need to. Say goodbye, Lukey.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Letters.
Say goodbye, James.
Bye.
We're all off to have a fag with Socrates. Cheers.
Right.
I'm a simple Geordie bastard.
Hey.
He's not a Geordie.
Nor is he simple.
Your legs are very hot.
I'm hot.
Does anyone mind if I get into my pants?
I want to play football. I want to play football again.
Last time you already pissed off and shouted at everyone, so you're not...
Yeah, well, got resulted, didn't it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.